Welcome to Revcast, a Civilization podcast focused on its console platforms.
I'm Carta Mandua.
Joe B. Reeves.
Alexander the First.
We have a really wide listenership. The three people that listen to our show are from three different sites. So,
yeah.
Episode 5. Joining us today, Joby Reeves.
Hi.
Alexander the First.
That's me.
And myself, Carta Mandua. This episode is a continuation of Episode 4. And you get some great promotions as well in the game.
In Civ 4, you've got tons of them that just stack up, but here they're much more streamlined so that you have to really pick and choose what you want to use, what you think will be the most useful to you. And I think sometimes it won't even give you a choice. It'll just say, like, do you want this one or this one?
Yes, it's a split between two of them. I think it's based on how you've been using the unit. In general, there are three types of upgrades. Some upgrades are only available to offensive or defensive units, while others are available to all units. Warrior units are the exception and may receive any kind of upgrade. Doesn't necessarily say how you get them. I've always thought it was somewhat random.
But it feels random.
Yeah.
Whether there's science behind it or not, I guess somebody will complain and tell us if they don't agree. Well, yeah.
I guess the archers and longbowmen sort of stuff are the defensive units, and the legions and stuff are offensive units. But okay, looking at the upgrades, you see that blitz and infiltration are both for attacking, whereas loyalty is for defending, and so is engineering. Guerrillas for attacking, and leadership is for defense. Most of those traits, then, are split between offense or defense.
Mm-hmm. Some of them are both. You have medic,
yeah,
march, veteran, and scout. Some of them are useful with an attack and a defensive stance.
And I feel like the ones that are both are more neutral. Your medic, your scout, come on. March? Everybody's going to march, whether you're attacking or defending.
Yep.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And veterans, well, they should just get bonuses.
Well, they do, fortunately. Just...
like, if you live, you should be rewarded. Or I should be rewarded.
If you live three times, yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Or if you're Germany, you're automatically a veteran.
Nice.
Well, that's because they were always fighting wars with somebody.
Yeah.
Is there any good synergy where you say you're playing a certain Civ that gets a certain bonus at a certain time? Is there a certain promotion that really clicks well with one of those Civ bonuses for any particular unit?
I'll tell you one that, again, let's go back to Germany, and I've said it before, but one that really clicks with me is the automatic upgrade for veteran units on the Changeman era. My God, I love that one. Not what you're asking for. I know, completely not what you're asking for.
Well, no, it's good, it's good.
Our listeners have asked for strategy. They don't want to hear infomercials. This kind of stuff, like what you just mentioned, is good.
Sometimes those Germans are taken for granted in the game. You know, people are talking about their other favorite civs, whatever they think is the best. But the Germans really have quite a bit going for them in terms of sheer militaristic power in this game. All of these bonuses to make them tough and long-lasting. So some of these civs will get a bonus that might help them to do a quick rush, but the Germans have real staying power in Civ Rev.
Through the entire game. Absolutely through the entire game.
I also like that you can form an army with just three units, and it kind of increases their power than rather if they were just three separate units will attack at the same time. It makes me feel like I have flanks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and I think the wonderful addition, and you get that self-training army that if you have a medic and a scout, an infiltration unit that you combine, then all three of them get the same upgrades spread across the entire army. You come up with a super army by combining units with different upgrades.
And that's really effective.
Very.
Great addition. That's a callback to Civ 3, actually, where you could put three units together in an army, but only if you had a great general. So I really love how in Civ Rev, you can just do it if you have three of the same type of unit. You can just combine them to make a big army. And I just really appreciate that. I wish they even done that with three different kinds of units, so you could have combined arms. You know, say you're in ancient times, you could have your spearmen and swordsmen in the front and your archers in the back.
Yeah.
Or even be bringing along that catapult to lay siege while your other stuff are out there fighting in the front.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be really cool. So maybe something for Civ Rev 2 or Civ 5.
Otherwise, you're dragging scores of armies and attacking in a specific order.
I think it's really quite effective and efficient to combine your units to make armies so that, well, you don't have all that clutter of individual little units everywhere.
Yep. Except when you strive and build and build and build and build, and your first moment of battle with them, you lose it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing beats that.
That's a real downer.
Or you send them over the sea, and the first ship you run into sinks it, so they don't even have a chance to attack.
Yep.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned great generals. I like that we can have a unit that randomly becomes a great general if we win. I know that's something that's been happening in Civ 4 as well, but it's a little bit different, though. In Civ 4, you have a unit and it gets an additional great general you can add to it. Here, your unit just transforms.
Yeah, the great general, he attaches to the unit and remains with it until the unit is killed. And yeah, you get the 50% attack and defense bonus. In addition to any other upgrades that you have. So you could have a real super powerful unit. You just hope, beyond hope, he attaches to the unit that has the upgrades.
Right.
We have a super scout. Well, who cares?
Yeah, that would be lame. One of the interesting things that I've noticed that we haven't discussed yet are the role of the militia unit, which is a new thing for Civ Rev. It's innovative. It hasn't really been done in any of the other Civ games. And what they do, you're just a cheap unit. They don't have any attack, just one defense and one movement. But the militia units appear in undefended cities when they're menaced by barbarians, and they also come with all ships.
Oh, this is what happens when you're stupid, and you accidentally send your warrior out to kill a barbarian before you realize that...
Barbarians can kill you.
Well, or you're like, oh wait, my warrior's not quite done being built yet in that city or something. This I like because it's a natural thing. It's what would really actually happen in a city if you didn't have a home guard or a...
Garrison.
A garrison. They would be like your home guard type people.
Remember that from, it was actually in Civ 2 on an attack.
Partisans.
That's it.
Like, your city gets taken and partisans will spawn.
Partisans come out and you can actually flip the city right back over to you. I always thought that was wonderful, but kind of the same extension.
The difference, I guess, is just that the partisans are the rebels that have arisen in the hills after the city's taken, and the militia are the cool
the people.
People,
we're still here and we're not going to let you take this city without a fight.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also cool that they come with the ships. It's kind of like the ship's crew can go on land, or they have a small contingent of troops with them that'll
protect.
Yeah, like if, you know, you drop them off on the land, and it's not just your one settler that's going to be defenseless. You've also got the militia that comes with it.
There is a difference between the ship ranger militia and the city militia, isn't there? Doesn't the ship ranger militia have a two movement?
You're probably right. So that means they'd move a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Than the city militias would.
Yeah, you'd only use them for backup anyway, so...
Well, that's the entire purpose of having it.
I mean, they should move faster.
Yeah.
It would be like in an emergency-type situation.
Yep.
I really love this addition of this unit because, well, it just makes sense that you don't have to train all of your military. Your people are going to defend themselves if you don't do it for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating psychological type of thing to think about.
Well, you know, it just shows that they really thought out the game, even though people have accused them of simplifying Civ.
No, it's...
That's not true.
No. There's a great amount of balance, but they've done their best to try and also tie in some historical time frame accuracy to the game as well. And just in the topics that you have both brought up, let's say with the Zulus in the modern era, that's a fascinating addition that not only is it potentially useful, but it fits within the era. Speaking from the 360 specifically, my main idea of any offensive combat situation is to either throw a spy, multiple spies, a feeler unit up against the walls to check on the defensive structure, and then always attack with scout ability. I'm way too conservative. I'm more of a builder, but if I'm actually going to go after somebody, I'm going to make absolutely positively sure that I'm going to completely destroy him on that first hit, or I won't do it at all. but invested so much time and energy and resources into building and protecting my land, I'm going to absolutely take it to the opposing city. It's going to be spy unit, then nuclear bomb, basically.
That's a good way of abstracting the warfare. You're not out there hitting them with a club or shooting them with a gun. You're going clandestine, however you say that, infiltrating their defenses and then enabling your crushing ICBM barrage to finish them off.
Mm-hmm. If there's any possibility of me getting a ship outside their city, always do. Plus one means a whole lot, especially in very close battles. That one bonus point can absolutely turn a battle. I've just found that if I attack a perimeter city and I walk through it, then basically the path has been laid that I'm just going to take that army that I've rushed into there, those groups of armies, I guess, and just start marching through the territory, because if that enemy civ has got me that mad to attack them, then I'm going to waltz and take the capital.
Definitely. There are strategies that can come in handy when you play the game that have application in many different games and maybe even in real life. I remember back in, long ago, in the 1990s when I was playing the old classic Warcraft 2 or even, old Civilization 2, there are two interesting strategies that I learned about that I tried to put into practice just because they were an interesting way to play. Those are the offensive defense and the defensive offense. So what those mean, an offensive defense is when you defend yourself, like you were saying, by taking the fight to them rather than letting them come to you. You've defended your cities by attacking them and keeping the pressure off of yourself.
Yeah, you can draw units to that city, pull his interest off of your cities by just taking the fight to his area.
The defensive offense is interesting as well, because what you do with that is you lightly defend everything you have and keep all of your crushing army, your strong built-up army, in one place where they can have strength in numbers. But you build up your infrastructure so that from their location, you've got them situated in a good location with the terrain, and you use that as like a band-aid. Somebody attacks you at one spot, your light defenses can cover it until your big army can arrive to clean up the mess.
Yep.
That has applications in Civ Rev as well, if you're going to play a defensive offense. But that involves letting the enemy come to you, and it's a little bit riskier, because if you've built up your cities, you don't want to necessarily risk losing everything you've spent all this time putting together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the offensive strategy is much more efficient than playing as a defensive player.
Yeah. Because no matter what you do as a defensive player, if you're going to get attacked by one civ, it's almost inevitable that you're going to get pinched by another civ at the same time. And if you put all your fortifications in front of the first civ that attacks you, your rear flank is going to be wide open to be taken by the other jerk that's on the map who is just waltzing in and going to take you.
Yeah, because in other civ games, you could turtle, you could be a builder a lot more, because the AI was different for each civ. But in Civ Rev, once again, all of the AI players are psychotic cannibal 5-year-olds.
Yeah, they want you to hate them.
And so it's harder to play as a defensive player, because they're just going to go after you.
Yeah. In previous podcasts, we've talked about that I like to be the builder in Civ 4. I like to be the inventor. I like to be the discoverer. And it's hard to do in Civ Rev.
Yep.
One of the first things I do when I start a new Civ Rev game, I explore with my initial units, and I find who my nearest neighbor is. Doesn't matter if it's Gandhi, Cleopatra, Genghis Khan, Montezuma, whoever, that person is going to be my target. I guess maybe if it was Alexander the Great, I would lay off, not just because of the name thing or anything, but because of his hoplite defenses. It's harder to uproot him.
Yep.
So you might have to coexist with him. But most of any of these other ones, you know, to see the first one that's next to me, I wipe him out, take his city, anything he's built, and one less little 5-year-old to worry about knocking on my door.
Those early years, those formative years of your Civ are so important to build and expand, that if you start worrying or start picking, I find that my cities don't develop as nicely as they could.
Right.
Those are just two completely opposing viewpoints, that you might develop a greater civilization or a larger civilization by taking over a city. Whereas I would rather turtle up and build in my city, hope for more culture, hope for more great people, and build that way. I think, ultimately, Alex's strategy is probably much stronger and much smarter.
Well, he's much more of a war monger than I am.
Yeah.
For more information on Revcast, our sibling shows Polycast and Modcast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Record date:
April 16th, 2009.
Civilization Revolution Sounds Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive.
Copyright 2009 Civilized Communication at civcom.net.